I'm KCII News Director, and on this edition of the KCII Agriculture Magazine, we're talking about the farmers market in Washington Central Park. We're speaking first with Sarah Grunewalt and Danielle Pettit-Majeski. This week is National Agriculture Week, and one aspect that we see agriculture in downtown Washington each week during the summer and into the fall is with the farmers market. Can you share when that's going to start back up for the season?
The annual farmers market, it's in its 31st season, will start on May 16th, Thursday night. It'll go from 5 to 7:30, and it'll run every Thursday except for July 4th through October 17th.
And why do you think it's important to have this in downtown Washington?
Well, I think it's important because it's a good way to get people together. It's a good way to encourage community collaboration and also share an opportunity for our vendors to share their fruits and vegetables, give people access to maybe healthy produce that they wouldn't otherwise try. And so I think it's just a really great opportunity for people to have conversations with these local growers so that they can, you know, try new things, try new healthy fruits and vegetables, and also have that social experience that they have with the rest of the community.
And as the Main Street person, I love bringing a group of people into downtown, not only for the market and for the social aspect like Danielle mentioned, but also to experience our retailers and our restaurants and make an evening of it and listen to the music of the Muni Band and the Thursday Night Live and be part of Washington and its community.
And talking about those conversations people then have with the vendors, people get a chance to hear about where their food is grown. Mm-hmm. How does that factor into the beauty of a farmer's market?
The more interested we get people in the process of how their food is grown and understanding where their food comes from, you know, to understanding when you plant the seeds, you know, how you take care of it, you know, then how you cook it, how you eat it, how they might be able to incorporate into their diets. And I think that adds a lot of value. And the more we can gain interest, what we found is when kids grow food, they're more likely to eat it. And so if we can generate some of that interest, even by having these conversations or seeing being exposed to different types of produce, I think that gets people excited to try new things.
And another way they're able to try new things at the farmers market is with the different events that you have mm-hmm. throughout the season. Can you share what some of those are?
Sure. So our first big event when the market starts is on May 30th. It's Ag Day, where part of the Chamber Summer Classic, the tractor parade, and the commodity groups will be present with food, and we'll have the modern ag display as we always do. We also are doing a cake decorating contest this year. It's the first one we've ever held. It's on June 20th. So if you are a baker and you are skilled in the arts or even not skilled in the arts of decorating cakes and want to enter it, it's free to enter. We'll be posting more rules soon. And then lastly is our Taster's Choice Salsa Contest enters its 20th year this year. Mm-hmm. And that's on August 29th. And we highly encourage people, if they have gardens and they make salsa, if they don't have a garden and they want to buy their produce from the farmers market and try their hand at making a salsa that could potentially win some awards, we'd love to have more entries this year. There's other things though that we do in addition that introduces people's stuff. We're going to do a tomato tasting. So we'll have our growers cut up slices of tomato. You can come in and try the different varieties. That'll come in the summer when tomatoes come in, so I don't have a date. Mm-hmm. We have the food trucks from all local food purveyors. That one food truck a week will have a featured food truck, and you can come and try their food. And maybe it's not something you want that week. There's other prepared food vendors in our market. There's all the restaurants in downtown. They'd love to help you.
Yes. And we're also trying to schedule some opportunities to do some, you know, showing people how to cook these foods. So doing some food demonstrations. Sarah and I are both involved in our Community Wellness Coalition. We work with Healthy Hometown, that's powered by Wellmark, to bring out some of these activities. And the farmers market is a great opportunity to express, you know, some of the best ways you can impact your local food system and how you can benefit from the food system that we have through the farmers market. And so we are hoping to get some food demos on the calendar so that people can see, you know, oh, I've never had a spaghetti squash. I'm a little intimidated. How do I cook it? You know, so we want to be able to break that down for some folks.
Or even what does it taste like?
Right, exactly. And how can I make it? Like, right. What kind of recipes can I use with it?
So I think the other thing that we get asked a lot about is like the senior vouchers. Mm-hmm. And those will be coming from Heritage. Mm-hmm. We don't know when, but we will do our best to spread the word when that happens. But that's something that we know people count on, that maybe are income limited, the farmer's market is a place you can come and get produce and healthy foods. We do have some assistance for that. There are vendors that take food stamps and WIC.
Yep.
We're working to try to get enrolled in the Double Up Food Bucks program. So for every dollar you spend, you get $2 worth of produce. So like things like that, we're trying to encourage people to come and utilize the market to help them feed themselves.
Exactly. And I just want to touch base. You mentioned the coupons. So those are for individuals over the age of 60 and above that are income eligible.
And why is it important then for seniors and for those who are eligible to have access to those fresh produce? I mean, a lot of it is grown in Washington County or in a contiguous county.
Mm-hmm. You know, the more opportunities you have for healthy foods, I mean, the healthier that you're going to be. And it's difficult sometimes to purchase those healthy, that healthy produce can be a higher price point when you're going to the grocery store, especially if you are on a limited budget. So these are a really great way to give people equal access to these healthy produce so they can have healthier outcomes and take better care of themselves.
And I noticed last summer when I was going to the farmer's market on maternity leave, how many kids I see running Yes. around and enjoying, you know, just the park. It's nice to see all ages at the market.
And I think that's true. You know, we have some great activities. I know we have a gal who does face painting, and that's always super exciting for our kids, you know, which gives parents another good reason to come, bring their kids, have a family event night, kind of like what Sarah said, taking advantage of the opportunity to be downtown.
And last year we had fantastic weather.
We did.
And so, you know, the better the weather, the more people we see, the more socializing that happens. And that's a big part of your health and wellness as well, is that social aspect. And we're very proud of the fact that we're an all ages event. Mm-hmm. You know, people bring, you brought your daughter.
Yes.
And
I brought my dog.
You brought your dog. I dragged my husband there. You know, it just, those kind of things. That's part of the fun of it, is getting out and exploring together and meeting old friends or meeting new friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when will it kick off? What's the first market date?
Thursday, May 16th. 5 p.m. Bob will ring the
cowbell,
the memorial bell for Neil Lampkin, and we'll kick it off with some early spring veggies. Hopefully, let's fingers crossed we get a thaw
maybe
here.
Maybe some shoots, you know, to plant your own garden.
Yeah, maybe some plant starts, and we'll obviously have the breads and baked goods and some handmade crafts and things like that. But as the season progresses, obviously all that produce comes in, and we're really looking forward to another great market season.
And we've got just some really good ideas. We met a few weeks ago and trying to reach out to some new vendors to bring some different variety to the market. So we're constantly thinking about what the community might look forward to, what they might enjoy, and how can we really make this an opportunity for everybody to come out and have a great night.
And if somebody wants to be a vendor, where can they get more information?
So you can get more information at mainstreetwashington.org. Otherwise, we are having a vendor information meeting on April the 25th at 5:30 at Washington Public Library. So please join us, even if you're just interested in hearing more information. We'd love to have you.
I also spoke with Market Master Bob Shepherd about the market. Now, when we talk about the farmers market, it's a chance to bring agriculture into Central Park. And what are some things that people who want to produce their own vegetables or fruits or items for the farmers market, what should they be doing now?
Well, this is really an appropriate time to be doing this interview. We need to be starting a lot of the cold products, which are your cabbage and broccoli, Brussels sprouts, all of them that they need to be started about right now. It's a little early yet for tomatoes and peppers. You usually want to start in mid-April with them, because you can't plant them until definitely after the last frost. I do recommend that anyone that's thinking about raising to bring to market to have two things at their disposal. One is as many catalogs from seed companies and so forth as you can, so that you get the descriptions of the different varieties. There's a book that comes from Iowa State Extension Service that also gives some of the testing that they've done at some of the test farms throughout the state. Use those two to very judiciously look at the different varieties. They are the difference between whether you make a profit or you don't. They'll tell about how many or how productive it is, what type of product it is, and what shape it is. People buy with their eyes as well as what they want. So really be careful of that. A good way to get started after you've decided on your varieties and have the seeds is you get some flats and you put a sterile soil mixture in the flats and actually plant the seeds in the flat. And I always recommend that you use a clear, like a saran wrap or something like that, over the top of the seeds until they sprout. Keep them in a fairly warm spot. Some seeds need sun, but most of them don't. And once they get started, you can keep them. If you put them far enough apart in the flat, you can actually leave them there until you can put them into the wherever you're going to put them, garden or field or whatever. But many people start them in the flats and then put them into what are called Jiffy pots. They're the small pots made out of peat, and put one plant from the flat into each one, and then it's got more room to grow and be closer to ready when it goes. Some of the problems you have starting them like that is that you don't get enough sun to them, and you really have to have a good sun accumulating window or whatever, but it can work, and you can be successful. You also see a lot of people that have got coal frames. They can move them out there as soon as the temperature gets high enough, but still not warm enough to put them in the ground. I think you need to also look at things such as people like a certain flavor. Tomatoes, there's everything from a sharp tomato to some that are so sweet that they just melt in your mouth. So you need to decide what you like, try that, see if the public likes it as well. But that's a good way to start.
And do you see many producers that live in town then?
We've had some in the past. Most of our growers are in the rural setting, not in town. But you definitely could, with care, could grow crop inside of town itself. You need to know which ones to grow. You could go with your tomatoes and your peppers, broccoli. Those are things that you can harvest some, and they just keep on harvesting for a length of time.
And what are some of the first foods that we'll likely see at the farmer's market when it starts back up for the season?
Well, what we see, the first things, is lettuce. We'll have peas, rhubarb. The main thing are your early spring crops that you can put in before the last frost. By the 1st of June, you're starting to see strawberries. You're starting to see some of the other crops. And we do have growers that grow in the high hoops. So they're pushing the envelope, and you're actually seeing product that is maybe a month ahead of what you expect in the open fields. A lot of the things are available earlier because through the years, this is our 31st year at Washington's Farmers Market downtown, and through the years, we've seen a lot more expertise and interest in growing product, and we've also seen those growers pushing the envelope to offer their homegrown, locally grown product earlier in the season. It's amazing what they can do to offer that local grown, tasty, tasty, fresh product.
That's been Sarah Grunewalt, Danielle Pettit-Majeski, and Bob Shepard talking about the Washington Farmers Market in Central Park. I'm KCII News Director Sally Hart on this edition of the Agriculture.
I'm Brandon Shanahan with KCII News. On this segment of the Agriculture Magazine, I'm talking with soybean farmer Lindsay Greiner to talk about the impacts of the soybean tariffs. So first question I had is, would you be able to educate me a little bit about the tariffs and kind of where we're at in that situation as far as the timeline goes?
Well, the tariffs went into effect last April or May. I don't remember the exact date, but that's when we put tariffs on Chinese goods coming into the United States. And shortly after we did that, then the Chinese put tariffs on U.S. goods going in. And the biggest target was soybeans because it was our largest export to China. And since then, there's been, we've had this ongoing dispute over trade. Really not so much about ag products as it is intellectual property and things like that, but the damage has been done in the agricultural trade area because that was our largest area that we exported to them. So, it's been going on a long time, and we're really hoping that we're getting close to a resolution.
just like tariffs aside, what kind of an impact does China have on the United States and Midwest agricultural market, and just kind of how big of a player are they?
Well, they're a huge player. About 60 to 70% of the soybeans that we export have been in the past exported to China. Now, this year, it's been quite a bit different since the trade dispute's been going on. So that percentage is, you know, it's almost dropped to zero. So it's huge. I mean, it's huge for soybean producers. It's huge for pork producers. So it's had quite a large impact on agriculture.
Yeah, and then with not being able to trade with China as much, kind of what are the workarounds with it, or how have farmers been getting by?
Well, one thing I know we've been doing from a soybean association standpoint is we've been concentrating on other markets around the world, and there are some success stories to be told with what we've been doing. Exports of soy to European Union is up about 150%. Exports to the Middle East are up about a little over 100%. Exports to Egypt are up 300%. So, you know, and we signed an agreement with Taiwan last December that they were going to increase their imports of U.S. soy. So there are success stories, but the problem comes when you look at all those markets and all the increases combined, they don't make up for what's been lost in China. So you take a Chinese market that was in the 35 to 37 million metric tons per year, and what we're looking at now, actual shipments probably, you know, in the 2 to 3 million ton area. It's a dramatic drop off. So it's quite substantial as far as losses to soybean farmers. I think one other bright spot though to point out is that the government did have the market facilitation program, which paid $1.65 a bushel to all the soybean producers, and I think that helped a lot. Now, that was a one-time deal, so we're really hoping that we can get a resolution to this trade dispute going into the next marketing year to kind of put prices up a little bit.
Yeah, and then so if things keep going the way they are, what kind of impact does that have on the future market, or what would happen if we don't get this settled out with China?
Well, if we don't get this figured out with China, it's going to have a huge impact. Now, you know, prices are down. You can't blame it all on trade disputes, because the fact of the matter is we just grew the largest soybean crop in history. So we're sitting on a lot large supplies, but, you know, supplies go up and down depending on weather here and around the world. So the dollar amount that this trade dispute has had on soybean prices, I really couldn't give a good answer as to how much, but my guess would be is that it's probably affected our prices, you know, in that 75 cents to a dollar and a half a bushel.
And then, so have you seen an impact on some of the other industries that are involved with the logistics of agriculture, like equipment manufacturers, or just any other industry that's not exactly farming but are reliant upon it?
Well, we have, because one of the first tariffs that was put on by the current administration was a tariff on steel and aluminum. So anything with those products in it, which, you know, farm machinery is made out of iron, and so that's raised the cost of farm machinery, what it costs manufacturers to make it. It's affected the price of buildings, especially steel buildings. So there's been a ripple effect. So not only have you lost, not only has the price of soybeans gone down, but the price of things that you buy to use on your farm has gone up. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
And so have these tariffs had any impact on your day-to-day operations, or is it more just on the back end and on the market side of things?
Well, I don't really think it's affected day-to-day operations. I think that farmers are still going about their business, doing what we would normally do. I think there's probably been an increased focus on expenditures. You know, what do I absolutely have to spend money on, and what can I do without? Because when you're looking at prices, especially soybean prices below cost of production, really got to watch your costs. So I think that's probably what the change has been for most farmers.
Awesome. Well, you answered all of my questions. Is there anything that I missed or anything else you wanted to add about tariffs or just the soybean industry as a whole?
Well, you know, I think I just came back from the Commodity Classic, and we listened to Secretary Sonny Perdue talk on Friday. We had Undersecretary in charge of Trade and Foreign Markets, Ted McKinney, talk to us. And while they can't, just say, well, we got a deal, it's going to happen for sure, they were very optimistic that progress is being made and that there could be a resolution to this in the future. And now, I don't know how quick. All that stuff is kind of left up for interpretation. But my hope is that in the next month or two, we see major progress and quite possibly a new trade deal with China. So that would be my hope. So I hope that all happens. And if it does, it'll be great news for farmers.
And now we're joined with soybean farmer Rob Davenport to get his perspective on the tariffs. How have these affected your day-to-day operations, or have they at all?
Well, they've affected your marketing. We just, normally we'd have a lot forward sold, but they're just, for the new crop. Fortunately, I have all of my old crop, my 2018 crop sold. But sales on 2019, it's very difficult to try to pencil it out with the prices we're seeing to be profitable. So, then it makes you wonder, well, do we have to grow more corn on corn acres? But the weather hasn't allowed us to do that. We didn't get any fall work done. We got very little, if any, nitrogen put down in the fall. So I think now we run into supply issues with that in the spring to do corn on corn acres. So that it's just, it's really screwed up the supply chain and how farmers are used to marketing their grain and how they've made their decisions for their next crop year. So it's been a challenge. I mean, we've looked at some different ways of, we've gone to, I took a non-GMO contract this year. That non-GMO contract actually made it profitable to grow soybeans. Now, it's been 25 years since we've grown non-GMO soybeans, so I'm hoping we know how to kill weeds. That's the big issue. But that at least made me profitable. So we had to do it. In a normal year, I would not have considered growing anything but a Liberty bean or a Roundup bean. I guess that's how it's affected me.
And then I guess it kind of transitions into my next question. So what kind of impact do you have on this going forward, or is there any end in sight with these tariffs?
I feel like there's end in sight because of the fact that they had some positive talks today. Now, that being said, I don't think there's any way if they dropped the tariffs today that we'd be able to get rid of this stockpile of beans that we have. We have such a huge supply right now, and with South America's crop coming on right now, China naturally buys from them this time of year. So I don't think that's going to change anything. So yes, I think we're going to see somewhat depressed prices for the next year or two, just so we can chew through the supply that we have on hand. 2018 was a very good soybean year, and we just have a lot of supply. So that being said, also, weather dictates all markets, and if we end up with a drought someplace, that could be a game changer, and we're back to very good prices that makes us profitable. And this, that's the only thing that's going to save it short term, I think, is the weather.
Of course. And then, so yeah, with the stockpile of beans, even like you'd mentioned, best case scenario, is there anything kind of that you have to get creative with as far as selling, other than just dropping prices, as far as like manufacturing? And I know you mentioned the non-GMO beans, but anything else along those lines?
Well, I was fortunate enough to tour the export facilities down in the Gulf, the Mississippi Gulf. There were a lot of beans going out, whole beans getting loaded to go to a crush facility in Argentina or into Europe. And I'm like, well, if that's the case, why don't we crush them here and sell them? I think there's opportunity for some more crush plants. It's just we have to get the right environment from the federal government to make that work. You know, our low prices right now, I think we're probably, I haven't looked recently, but we were as high as $2 out of the market, out of the world market. We were $2 cheaper per bushel. Well, if that's the case, you'd think that would sure drive demand. And I think some of these countries have realized the sale's on, and if you want some cheaper beans, but really, really good quality beans, come to the U.S., you know. So we are moving beans. It's just, not the volume that we'd like to move.
Have you seen any impact on just kind of the logistics that go into agriculture, maybe like something like equipment manufacturers? Have you seen any impact with them as far as, or just any industry that's sort of tied to agriculture but not actually farming, if that makes sense?
Your ag retailers, as far as the equipment manufacturers, yeah, I think they're seeing some effects. But, you know, some of the bigger ones, John Deere's down in South America, Case IH is down in South America. You know, those bigger companies down there, they're doing very well because South America is profitable, and if they're selling down there, then, hey, you know, great. But I think you see it more on the local, your local dealership, and how they it's affecting them more because, I mean, they don't have that world market. They just have their market in their counties here, and that's it, you know. So I think they're being affected. I talked to some of them, and they say, yeah, they are, you know. So, so yes and no, those equipment manufacturers. The manufacturers, I don't think, are being hurt as bad as the dealerships. The actual retailers.
And that's been Lindsay Greiner and Rob Davenport giving their perspectives on the soybean tariffs. I'm Brandon Shanahan with KCII News.
Magazine.